You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Live across Wisconsin on Civic Media, you're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, powered by Up North News. Now, from our Lake Wissota studio, here is the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Good morning. It is 8:06. Nice to have you here up north on this Thursday, May 8th, 2025. Sam is on the board. Greg is back in an hour for Matt and Air on Air. And it's kind of like the last day of school for me before taking a little break. Chad Holmes will be filling in here tomorrow. Luke Mathers and Greg Bach next Monday. No, sorry. Take that back. Matt Rothschild next week for a big chunk of the week. So tune in for hearing a whole lot from Matt. Always runs a great show whenever he guest hosts here across the Civic Media Radio Network. Coming up this hour, Melissa Baldoff is just minutes away with a climate check. This one is truly a what the heck edition when you hear about some of the latest climate-related news that's out there. And then at 8:30, we'll talk to State Senator Sarah Kieske from Lodi, a new state senator, with a new bill that addresses whether your landlord should be Wall Street. Hedge funds buying up single-family homes and driving up the price in the housing market in Wisconsin. It's a national problem, so this isn't the first place where restrictions on hedge funds are being proposed, but we'll talk to Sarah Kieske about that. We'll talk to Sean O'Malley in just less than 15 minutes, more about money and markets for this day, but let's get things going here with an updated forecast from meteorologist Brittany Merlot, where we were talking about, you know, the cool down that we're in now. And then it'll warm up again for the weekend. And for a time there, it looked like there might be a little wetness in that warmer weekend. But I think are we just doing the warmer weekend and not so much on the wetness?
Yeah, I really think so. It doesn't look like it's really going to produce any of the showers or storms that the model runs prior were really showing us. And now it really looks like if there is going to be any rain on Friday or Saturday, it's really going to fall Friday night. And the only place I think it might make it to the ground would be far northwest Wisconsin. Otherwise, I think all of us are staying dry until middle of next week. So we've got a long road ahead of us of comfortable conditions. The heat's going to rise this weekend. We've also got a very high fire danger for the rest of this week. That will continue until we get significant rain. So no burning. Watch those equipment and the sparks and the chains dragging, things like that. We've already had plenty of wildfires across the state. And the other thing that's going on is last night, or still this morning, we had frost, right? So frost advisory went out for central Wisconsin. Temperatures were below freezing north into Hayward, Phillips, Medford, Antigo, Rhinelander. And now that cold tonight is going to slide further south into the Fox Valley and towards Madison. Could even go towards areas of Richland Center. It looks like La Crosse, far west, you're away from that, and Eau Claire as well. But everybody else, if you have sensitive plants out there, cover them up, bring them inside. It's going to be a cold one through tomorrow morning. But then by the afternoon, we're really going to warm things up. So today's highs, we're going to be in the mid-50s far east from a lake breeze to mid-60s west. And then as we go through tomorrow, we're looking at about 60 degrees towards Milwaukee to about 80 degrees in Superior and far northwest Wisconsin. And we're all going to hit those mid to upper 70s, nearing 80 degrees for Sunday as well. So a gorgeous Mother's Day too.
That's perfect. Oh, that if you can get a good Mother's Day, you know, where you can maybe do a little grilling or picnic or whatever, yes, all the better. Brittany, mm-hmm, thank you so much. Have a great day.
You're welcome. You too.
All right. Let's turn right to our climate check. Melissa Baldoff is here. A little special time today. We're kind of juggling things around with folks. And Melissa, thank you for your flexibility to join us here. Sean O'Malley coming up in a few minutes. State Senator Sarah Kieske coming up at 8:30. How's Melissa today?
Doing great. Loving the sunny weather, even though it's a little cooler than I would want. And is ideal, but it's beautiful and sunny, and that I am quite happy about and can't wait to get outside and enjoy the day.
Yes. So let's cover this week in climate news. And I mean, truly head scratching stuff. The Headline from the New York Times, the Trump's EPA plans to shut down the Energy Star program, one of the most wildly popular and successful government programs over the past 33 years. So I guess you have to shut it down then?
Yeah, this one is really just mind-boggling for me, even with this administration, who no one could accuse of being smart and strategic about darn near anything. And there's a whole lot that we can and should talk about when it comes to the Energy Star program. And I'm sure that most listeners here are familiar with it. And even if they don't know all the nuts and bolts, I can't imagine anyone hasn't seen that, you know, blue logo on appliances.
Which, by the way, all it means is that that particular appliance has reached the energy efficiency standards set by the federal government. And so there, that could lead to rebates or tax credits that over the past 30 years have saved $500 billion. One person in the article here, it would be Paula Glover, president of the Alliance to Save Energy, says Energy Star costs the government $32 million a year, $32 million for those tax rebates and things like that, but delivers $40 billion in annual savings on utility bills. So, Melissa, again, you could be the most stringent fiscal conservative and say this is a return on investment.
Exactly. And, you know, this, this program is not any kind of mandate on these, the companies manufacturing these products. You know, this is not saying that everybody has to meet all of these standards. It's just, you know, the ones that do display.
It's carrot, not stick.
Yes, exactly. So it's obviously an incentive for them to be able to promote that as a feature and a benefit of their product. It's a signal to consumers that this is a product that is going to save you money on your energy costs. Definitely something that I've always looked at when I've been purchasing appliances, and I'm sure many other people have as well. So it's really just, you know, it costs them, you know, next to nothing comparatively. And obviously, you know, $32 million isn't nothing, but in the grand scheme of the federal budget, it really is.
Well, especially when it can go toward, you know, millionaire and billionaire tax cuts instead.
Right. And when you think about the amount of money it's saving, and for an administration that says it wants to reduce household costs, and quite frankly, for an EPA that Lee Zeldin has said that it wants to, you know, he wants to change the mission of the EPA to help people, you know, reduce the cost of, you know, buying a car and, you know, all these and starting a business and all these things. Well, this program helps people reduce the cost of their energy bills. So it, you know, it really is stunning that they want to eliminate such a successful program that is actually in line with what they say they want to do.
Right. And again, not a mandate. It's about reaching certain standards, carrot, not stick. Now,
are people who, you know, I just have to point out, the people making these decisions are people who probably haven't paid their own utility bill in years and have no idea how much a utility bill costs.
Yeah. The kind of savings that the average American is getting, again, means nothing to them when you're already a billionaire. Now, there is the next one we're going to talk about is, again, closer to, you know, a mandate. But again, it was one that was helping the economy lead the way toward a cleaner climate. In California, there is a requirement that starting in 2035, so still 10 years down the road, but there is a requirement that all new vehicles sold in California by that time have to either be electric or otherwise non-polluting, which, again, from a climate and a clean air standpoint, makes all the sense in the world. And if you still have a gas-powered car, you can still sell it and everything else. But they're talking about new. You're not going to bring any new gas-burning cars into California. It's not just that the Trump administration wants to get rid of it, but frankly, 35 other Democrats voted with Republicans in the House to kill that rule. And Melissa, I certainly see the hesitancy that some people are expressing. But again, we're talking 10 years down the road. There really wasn't a good reason to take this kind of action now.
I agree. I find it really disappointing. Reading the article and seeing the case that some of the Democrats who, sided with Republicans, seeing the case they're making, I get where they're coming from. And of course, they make some points about, not increasing costs. And, one representative, Laura Gillen, who's in New York, worried about, she talked about the cost and, especially during this market where we're seeing people who have been really impacted by tariffs, trade war, and the very bad decisions made by Trump. And I get that, but I don't think that's the right reason to make. That's not a good excuse to me. We need to be more principled and not be distracted by those excuses, because they are excuses. We know that this is the right thing to do. And we know in the long run, this is the more responsible thing to do, and from a fiscal standpoint too. This is ultimately going to be the transition that the industry makes. And when it comes to all of the conversations we've had about the transition to a cleaner economy and cleaner sources of energy, the auto industry is one where the market and the manufacturers really have been very engaged and very much like at the table for the conversation. And auto manufacturers are really a part of that shift. And we're not, they're seeing the demand for more EVs. They are already making that shift in production. And I think that we don't want to just cave to the fossil fuel industry on this one. So it is very disappointing to see Democrats voting with Republicans on this one.
And it's one that other Democrats chalk up to an intense, and they say misleading, lobbying campaign by the oil industry. All told, some $10 million was spent lobbying lawmakers about this, plus a seven-figure campaign by petroleum refiners. So really, it was not about consumer choice. It was always about gutting the Clean Air Act, and they're winning a little victory this time around. Melissa Baldoff has her climate check. Melissa, thank you so much. Appreciate it as always. We'll hope for better news when we talk again in 2 weeks.
Absolutely.
All right. We have Sean O'Malley on the way, and we're going to talk a little bit about money and markets. And we're also going to talk to State Senator Sarah Kieski about hedge funds and the ownership of single family homes. First, wanted to let you know that the Brewers lost to Houston, so they did not sweep the Astros. They lost by a score of 9-1. They have the day off. They are traveling once again, this time down to the Tampa area to take on the Tampa Bay Rays, and then they'll be taking on the Cleveland Guardians earlier next week. Sean O'Malley's on the way from the heart of America's up north, live from Lake Wissota. Thanks for making this the place to spend part of your mornings. I'm Pat Kreitlow. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
One of the big headlines this morning is that President Donald Trump is saying that he's about to announce a big new trade agreement with the United Kingdom, and that it's going to set the tone for other trade agreements that will bring an end to this trade war. color me skeptical, because again, there's a history of essentially shifting some deck chairs on the Titanic and saying, it's a whole new boat. It's a whole new boat, when they just are making little cosmetic changes along the way. So yes, you're going to hear about a deal. And yes, I'm telling you I'm skeptical, but let's all wait until we actually see the details on it to see what's ahead. Time to talk to our friend Sean O'Malley about money and markets today, especially as it relates to the tariffs and the markets. And Mr. O'Malley, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing well, Pat. How are you doing this morning?
I'm all right, thank you. We've spent a lot of time talking about the tariffs, the trade wars, and whether supply chains will be disrupted. We talked a lot about supply chains in our last hour, and that even if there are resolutions, whether it's a trade deal with the UK or China or anybody else for that matter, you're already seeing a kink in the supply chain. You need to look no further than the ports in places like Seattle and Los Angeles, right?
Correct, yeah. We're seeing that the big tariffs were on China, 145%, basically driving up what you would normally pay, being 100%, to actually 2.5 times what you would normally pay. So that's causing a lot of sticker shock for a lot of folks. And a lot of importers are simply saying that they're not going to pay that price. And you're seeing that reflected in, as you mentioned, both the Port of Los Angeles, where already this week imports are down from China 35%. And yes, in Seattle, there is not a single container ship in the port. So we are definitely seeing the tariffs going from sort of conversation and topic and what's going to happen and maybe to now this is where the rubber meets the road. And we're starting to see the ships basically stop coming, and we're also seeing it impact shipping and distribution, trucking, for example, and other things right now.
Yeah. I mean, didn't UPS just announce a big layoff?
Right. Yeah, that's the big example we've got right now is that UPS has announced 20,000 layoff, and that's all for truckers. So it's not general personnel. It is specifically in their trucking fleet. I actually have a contact inside. They're basically getting rid of their most junior level of truckers simply because they don't have the need for that many people. You're going to see that happening in the ports. That's already been mentioned that some of the longshoremen who normally take cargo off the ships, we'll have fewer shifts. And we're looking at basically an employment picture that could be changing here in the near future.
Yeah, again, and I don't always like to sound this cynical, and yet I have to anyway, yeah. Because you had the latest jobs report last Friday, and all we heard about is, you know, we're back, baby. You know, look at this great number. And I frankly didn't think 177,000, you know, jobs added was that big of a number. And saying the markets are back, baby. And I'm like, no, wait, we talked about this. The markets drop and it becomes a buying opportunity, not for the middle class, but for people at the very top. So these things that they might be good indicators, you understand why I'm a little skeptical.
Oh, absolutely. I think it's healthy skepticism. I mean, if it had been over 200,000, yeah, that's considered usually pretty robust growth. The forecast was for 185. We didn't even meet forecast. We didn't fall very short of it. It was 177, as you point out. But that's still not an amazing number. Anything around the 150 to 200 number is kind of okay. Below 150 is not so okay. So, we're still okay at this point in time, but we'll see. But the big thing, the big surprise economically last week was GDP going down in first quarter 2025 by 0.3%. So that means you have to go back to, you defined recession in one of our earlier discussions, right? It's two consecutive quarters of GDP going down. Well, one. And now we're looking at the impacts of the tariffs that is going to definitely cause prices to go up, economic activity to go down, and it's going to put pressure on the employment picture. So that's a three-headed monster called stagflation that we really don't want to see manifest itself. But even in the notes from the Federal Reserve yesterday, as they left rates unchanged in the Fed Open Market Committee meeting, they said that we are leaving it unchanged because we are concerned about stagflation.
And rightly so. It's one of those things. You think you never want to live to see certain things. You want to live to never see a pandemic. And yet we did have a pandemic. We've come through on the other side. You and I went through, you know, the stagflation phase of the late 70s, early 80s. It was really hard to tame that beast. And it caused a lot of pain to get there. And you're thinking, okay, now we know how to operate this so that we don't face stagflation again. I mean, you'd have to really work at it to create stagflation. And it turns out we got somebody willing to work at it to create stagflation.
Yeah, and it's really unfortunate why it's happening. It's largely because Donald Trump and his administration, including Peter Navarro, his advisor in this respect, have no real understanding of what a tariff is. They think that some other country is paying this. I'm sorry to break it to you, Mr. President, but the United States does not, the tax code does not cover other countries.
No, and
they're not taxpayers here.
No, and we talked yesterday about Mark Pocan and grilling the Treasury Secretary, and that thing is up to 1.2 million views now because people do not like tariffs. They do not like the direction this is going in, and sure. the polling is reflecting that, if not the markets on a day-to-day basis. Sean O'Malley, thank you again as always. We will talk to you in a couple of weeks. Appreciate your expertise.
Yep. Very good. Thank you. All have right. a great day.
You bet. Coming up next, State Senator Sarah Kieski. But first, a reminder, sign up for our newsletters, plural, multiple newsletters now. Head to our homepage at upnorthnewswi.com. Live from Lake Wissota, what a great place to spend part of your mornings. I'm Pat Kreitlow, and this is the Civic Media Radio Network. Welcome back to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow. That'd be me, the Pat Kreitlow part of it, here on the Civic Media Radio Network on this Thursday morning, May 8th. If you've listened to the show long enough, it won't surprise you to hear any comments that I would make about hedge funds and the nature of what I would call vulture capitalism. You have to keep in mind that you can be a capitalist, you can be pro-capitalism, but that can mean a lot of different things. Same as democracy, you know, the way that we have democratic with a small d elections here is not the same as the way they hold elections in the UK or other places. You can have many different flavors. Well, the different flavors of capitalism often find a way to run astray almost to the point of oligarchy if you don't rein in some of the excesses. And I'm going to say that again, that from Adam Smith on down, to say capitalism, free markets, does not mean no guardrails. It does not mean no government. It actually relies on responsible government oversight to allow for a capitalist society to operate in its most healthy manner. Unfortunately, vulture capitalism has struck the housing market even, and we have an affordable housing crisis in the state and in this country. So some folks are connecting the dots and looking at ways to look at hedge funds and ask themselves, should Wall Street really be a landlord in Wisconsin? Let's talk to State Senator Sarah Kieski about that. She's authored a bill that would restrict single-family home ownership by hedge funds. Senator, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Pat. I'm great. Thank you. Thanks for having me on.
It's so nice of you to be here for this. I know you're still getting your feet wet in the new role here. There's a lot to learn. And I also know from being when you're a new state senator, sometimes, you know, ideas come up and you may or may not have run on them, but you might be just the right person to author this bill or that bill and speak on it. And so it was refreshing to see your name next to this one, this bill that would restrict hedge fund single family home ownership in Wisconsin. Can you help people connect the dots as to why that would be a good piece of legislation?
Yeah, so you're right. I am brand new. I've been in my position now 4 months. And one of the things I heard oftentimes when I was going around the district was about the affordability crisis, as you mentioned earlier. People can't afford housing, and this is causing all kinds of dilemmas, from where you can live to how much you can pay for basic necessities. And so that was one of the issues that, as I was working on thinking about, if I were to bring any legislation forward, what meaningful legislation could I do? And so my office and I worked on figuring out, is there anything maybe even out there that has been looked at that we could contribute in our state of Wisconsin? So there's a Virginia law that we're kind of framing ours around that is similar. It is about preventing hedge funds, and hedge funds, for anybody that doesn't quite know, it's basically investors that pool their money. So it's a bunch of investors that put their money together, pool it so that they have better access, higher revenue to be able to make bigger purchases or more purchases. And so it gives them, you know, basically high buying power and then ability to be a monopoly, really. And so hedge funds are what we're trying to prevent from buying single family homes in the state of Wisconsin. We see that they have already, about three of them have been doing this in Milwaukee, in primarily Black communities, actually. And what's happening is when we take homes off the market, either these hedge funds are holding them and waiting for time when they can then gain a huge proceeds if they sell it down the road. They don't really need people to be even living in it because they're so rich that it doesn't matter if they miss a bit of income, but they can make a high dividend on it. Or they're turning them into rentals and being able to decide where their rental prices will be and be able to really price people out of the rental market, and or they're turning them into vacation rentals. And so the dilemma then is all of these homes are not available for families to purchase. And one of the things that we know is purchasing property is one of the ways to build your own wealth. And so if we take that away from families, we are taking away something very critical for the middle class, lower income individuals that could help them build up in a capitalistic society, right? That then they no longer have access to. And I fundamentally feel like that is wrong.
Yeah. And so connecting those dots, as these single family homes are plucked out of the stock of available homes to purchase, obviously it's going to lift prices for all the others. Now, if you're one of those homeowners, sure, it's good news for you. But the crisis we're talking about is affordable housing writ large, having that supply of single family homes that is available. So there has been this push both in Congress and in state legislatures to limit hedge fund ownership. What are you, I know that there's been some bipartisan talk about the idea, but I think it's fair to say that Republican lawmakers aren't exactly racing toward the bill en masse, even though some understand what the situation is. Are you already receiving pushback on it, or are you receiving encouraging words either from Republican legislators or people in the community who may be Republican but understand the market situation?
Well, the great news is when I proposed this, I did write about it a little bit on social media, for example, or when I've been going to my town halls. I've had at least 7 listening sessions all across my district. And I will say, across the board, 99% of people are really excited about this, didn't really understand that this was happening, and really recognizing, oh my gosh, so supply and demand, right? If we're taking away more of the supply, then the demand will not be able to meet that. And then those prices, again, will be pricing people out that need affordable homes. So I've been having a ton of interest in it and support of it. 41 other legislators have signed on to this bill, which is huge. It is bipartisan, but only one of them is a Republican. And what I've heard is that when a bill is proposed by a Democrat, again, I'm new, so I'm kind of learning the lay of the land, it is rare if you're an author that the other party will sign on. So It's very frustrating because I know this is an important issue, whether or not you're independent Republican or a Democrat. And so I'm hopeful that, like, even just getting the news out can help people recognize, no, this is going to help everybody. This is going to help your constituents, wherever you live, if we do this proactive bill in the state of Wisconsin so that we don't become a place where we have this kind of monopoly of ownership.
And to be clear, this is a problem that can be addressed on multiple levels. We've mentioned certainly in Congress. There's certainly something to be said at the local level, too, in terms of zoning, in terms of encouraging more construction of single-family homes, and not just McMansions, folks. There's definitely room for more affordable single-family homes to be built out there. I, for one, would love if these hedge funds got to be more involved in construction of new housing stock rather than, you know, driving up the expenses in what's there right now. But you're suggesting what can conceivably be done at a state level. That I agree with you that there's probably more Republican support than the co-authorship would reflect. But in this particular legislature over these past, 14 years that Republicans have been in charge, it's rare now that Democratic authored bills are even scheduled for a public hearing. And I can tell you, having been in the majority when Democrats controlled the House, we had no problem putting Republican authored bills up for public hearings. We didn't think the bills would necessarily pass, but it would have been, downright rude not to at least let them have a public hearing, let people testify on it. That's not the time that we live in right now. So I really appreciate you being willing to take time out for things like this to tell people about the measure. Sounds like you're getting good public support. So I guess the next step really is hoping that you can convince the appropriate Republican committee chair to give the bill a public hearing.
Well, and I don't think it's going to be me that can convince them, right? It's our democracy that is at peril when we don't allow even a hearing about a bill that could possibly be very important to a lot of people. And so that is troubling to me. And right now it is sitting in a committee when there have been requests by press to say, hey, are you going to be having this for a hearing with the chairperson of that, which is Senator Quinn? There has been no comment. So I find that not just rude, but undemocratic. And so I'm hopeful that maybe people that are that care about this issue too, maybe give a little pressure in that direction, because I know I try to respond to constituents and hopefully he does too.
I would be very curious to get Senator Romaine Quinn's comments on this, because he has a very long experienced career in real estate in the Barron County area. He has most certainly seen the crisis of affordable housing for single family homes. And I cannot imagine why he would want to be part of the roadblock to making housing stock more affordable in Wisconsin. So, yes, I think inquiries would be very welcome for Senator Quinn's office. A couple of minutes left here. Senator Sarah Kieske of Lodi is here with us. We know that today Republicans on the Joint Finance Committee are going to cut more than 600 items from the state budget bill that Governor Tony Evers has requested. And we've talked about this at length. This is what they've done in all four state budget cycles. So just, again, from a 30,000-foot view, when you hear as a new legislator that Republicans are cutting 600 items in one motion, no individual votes on the merits of any of these ideas, how does that strike you as a new state senator? Sarah, did we lose you or did we lose me?
Sorry, I'm not sure what happened.
Okay, that's okay. We had a little screen freeze there. And I was simply asking just for a quick answer on hearing that Republicans are going to cut more than 600 items on a single vote rather than going through the merits of those measures. How do you accept that? How do you think of that as a new legislator?
Well, I find it wild. and so, learning, right? Trying to understand, how is this process? What happens? So there's the budget that is presented, and then all of a sudden on one vote, and all kinds of things can be ripped from it. So I'm trying to figure out, what's being ripped from it? This is 21 pages of the document that they're going to be voting on. All these things are going to be ripped from it on one vote. You're right. They're not even hearing about it. What's going on here? that are really important. I get it. There might be a little bit of excess here or there that you want to, you know, carefully refine. But I mean, one of the ones that really has me, because it's very important to me, law enforcement and behavioral health collaboration grants, $1 million to help emergency response collaboration programs between behavioral health services and law enforcement. I fundamentally believe that's so important. That is being voted out. I could give you more examples.
Oh, there's so many examples. And again, every one of them worthy of at least a quick discussion. But the Joint Finance Co-Chairs have made clear that, you know, Democratic members cannot even talk about essentially these items that are being cut. It's an up or down on the full motion, and that's it. And that's a heck of a way to run a railroad. State Senator Sarah Kieske from Lodi, thank you so much for your time. We really appreciate it. Take care out there.
Oh my gosh. Thanks so much, Pat.
All right. Thank you. And a reminder that Chad Holmes will be filling in for me here starting tomorrow as I take a little time off for helping a friend get married. Very special time for them, and pleased to be part of everything that's going on there. I'm Pat Kreitlow reminding you, remember that Pledge of Allegiance, how it ends, liberty and justice for all. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Right now, as we start to wrap things up for our mornings together, before I take a little time off, as mentioned before, and what with expanding the show to 3 hours, was it 2 weeks? It was 2 weeks ago yesterday. Feels like six, but we did it, and we appreciate you coming along for the ride. But in doing so, it's juggled a lot of schedules and things. As you know, Greg Bach is still here from 6 to 8, but then he takes the 8 o'clock hour to prepare for Matt and Air on Air that he and Jane co-host coming up next here across the Civic Media Radio Network. And Sam Davison, our old friend, is on the board for the 8 o'clock hour, and we just frankly haven't had time to chat with guests and juggling things around. And basically, I've introduced him before when he was on the old morning show, representing the pride of the greater Ringle Hatley area. Hatley.
That's right.
Yeah. Now, which one was it? Are you from Ringle or Hatley?
I'm from Ringle.
Yeah, Ringle, of course. How could I have mixed that up? And to everybody looking at each other and puzzled looks on their face, just east of Wausau. If you're on 29 and you head east out of Wausau, you see Weston. Yep. But then you see Ringle.
It's big enough.
And then you see Hatley.
It's big enough to have its own highway exit. So
that's
still
right.
Important, right?
Yes. And what's at the Ringle Highway exit?
Is
that the one with the Arby's with the gas station, or is that a different one?
That's the Weston one. There's there's a car repair place. I like to say that there's like three things in Ringle. There's like the town hall, there's a bar, and there's the post office, and that's about it.
Okay. Yeah, I see the bar now. I zoom in enough, and there's Ringle Backyard Saloon or Brickyard Saloon.
Yeah,
sorry.
You checking it out on Google Maps?
Absolutely. That's my expert, my pro move on everything. And again, just down the road is the thriving metropolis of Hatley, where you will find a Dollar General there near at the exit on your way to the BP. Are there a lot of feuds between Ringle and Hatley? I mean, does it ever turn into violence like on Anchorman, or is there, you know? People throwing tridents around?
I haven't lived there for close to 5 years now. Things may have changed since then, but it was sort of a friendly rivalry back when I lived in Ringle.
Where does it, Ringle, Hatley, is that Wausau School District, or does that stretch over to Wittenberg?
Maybe over to Wittenberg. I went to DC Everest.
Okay, so you're in the Wausau area.
Just east of Wausau, yeah.
Okay. All right. And then you work one of the Madison morning shows right now, but you're a man with hopes and dreams. You're going places.
Yeah.
You're not just staying in that booth forever.
Well, not much longer, actually. In just a few weeks, I'm long term, I'm going to become a social studies teacher. And this summer
awesome.
I'm taking off to work at a scout camp So that'll be a good time.
Which scout camp?
Camp Desomas up in Rhinelander.
Up in Rhinelander. Now, that one I don't know. As a Boy Scout way, way, way back when, I know that a couple of the camps, they still operate, and so I would know some of the names if I heard them. That one doesn't ring a bell. What is it that you do at camp with the Boy Scouts up there? Do you have a particular specialty or thing that you like to do?
Kind of wherever they put me each year.
Okay.
This year I'm going to be leading the Business and Technology Center. So that'll be
fun.
Teaching some merit badges. Yeah.
For business and technology.
Yeah, you wouldn't think that they'd have that at a scout camp, but
no, I love that.
There's a couple of things that it's pretty cool there.
So long as they can also, you know, build a fire and things like that. And
sure. Yeah.
From not all my years, I wasn't there that long, but from my time in scouting, the thing I remember most was winter camping, and we were supposed to bring our dads along, and you were theoretically out there in the snow, you were given one match, and so you really had to work on your fire building skills. You had to get the kindling just right. It had to be dry and everything, because you were only going to get one match. Five matches later.
Yeah, I guess not.
And by the way, that's not just me. That's me and dear old dad. And dad was getting, he was getting frustrated. You know, it's like, who builds a fire in the snow anyway? And eventually we got it going. But yeah, if it was a one match situation, I think that sounds like something out of a Jack London novel or something. Yeah, we'd have been dead in the snowbank at that point. But I suppose you're a pro at it.
Maybe. It's been a while. Look, I usually have a lighter in my car, so I don't need to have a single match. But
right, I mean, not to the extent of Eagle Scout Luke Mathers. I mean, let's be clear. And if you did not know, just ask him; he'll tell you that he's an Eagle Scout. But these are great skills that, you know, you need the outdoor skills, but you also need the indoor skills too. The, you know, science and math and technology and everything else that goes along with it. So it's great to hear that is part of it. So why social studies? Why are you deciding to be a social studies teacher?
Well, once upon a time in a former life, I was going to be a math teacher. Then COVID happened and I realized I didn't want to teach geometry for the rest of my life. I don't know. I actually met Tim Slicker, one of the hosts of Busted Pencils here on Civic Media. And he sort of got me back into it. And social studies was the path that I chose.
That is awesome. I mean, look, we are all about teaching civics and social studies here on the radio and at Up North News. We need an informed citizenry, and it, honest to God, starts in social studies classes. So as important as all the math and science and everything else is, boy, to get to find out that there, you know, there's a new crop of social studies teachers out there just warms my heart. So I thank you very much for doing that, and wish you all the best in doing it. I know I'll be talking to you on the back end of my vacation, but just in case we don't get a chance to talk about that, I'm glad to learn that about you and glad that you're doing it.
Well, thanks.
Yeah, thank you. Well, no, thank you. And now here's where I thank everybody else for coming along for these past couple of weeks as we expand the show to 3 hours, 5 days a week. We did it for 5 days last week. 4 days this week, no days next week, 3 days the week after. But then I swear, we're doing 3 hours a day, 5 days a week. My thanks to today's guest, State Senator Sarah Kieski, Melissa Baldoff, Sean O'Malley, Michael McElroy from North Carolina, the Cardinal and Pine, Chad Holmes, who will be filling in here starting tomorrow, and then Matt Rothschild next week. And thanks to all of you for being here this morning. I am Pat Kreitlaw. I'm the founding editor of Up North News, the Wisconsin outlet for Courier, a pro-democracy news network building a more informed, engaged, and representative America. Take care. I'll see you May 20th.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.